I assure you that tax collectors and prostitutes are entering God's kingdom ahead of you. Jesus was talking to persons in robes who held positions in religious institutions. Hey, that's me. That's a riddle, I think, for this text. You know, when I was thinking about this text, it made me think that Jesus wasn't any fun on game night. Does anybody remember the game Twister? Who played Twister? Twister is a game. Do you kids know a Twister? You know the Twister is a plastic mat with dots on it, right? Of four different colors. And then you had a little spinner. And you spin it, and you had to put a certain body part, a hand or a foot, on a dot with a particular cup. Brian, do you know what I'm talking about? All right. Don't know if Brian did Twister or not. So you would spin, and it would say, left foot green. And everybody would have to put a left foot on green, or right foot red. And you have to put right foot on red, or right hand yellow. Right hand yellow, sorry. I was a little slow at Twister. But you'll get all tangled up, right foot red, and all sorts of hilarity ensued. Loads of fun. The reason that I suspect that Jesus wasn't any fun on game night was that he refused to join into the game that the chief priests and the Pharisees and elders were playing. Oh, the games we play on game night and every night. When they asked what authority he had to do the radical things he was doing, they were playing not Twister, but the power game. It's one of the oldest games in the book, the power game. The more power that I have, the less that you have. If I have the power, I get to set the rules. If my authority trumps your authority, then I have the power and you don't. You know the game. We all play it. Politicians try and claim authority by saying the American people, as if that is a monolithic thing. Religions claim authority by tying themselves to the Almighty God. If I claim God is on my side, that trumps pretty much every other authority. So they ask, by what authority do you do these uncomfortable things, Jesus? Or as the Common English Bible translated, the translation we read, what kind of authority do you have? That's an interesting translation because the chief priests and the elders who held the power in the temple precincts received their political power and religious power debatably and rhetorically from the Almighty God, but more concretely, they were put in place by Rome, by the emperor. They were chosen by and blessed by Pilate, the governor, who gave them their authority under occupation. They were collaborators with the powers of the world. What kind of authority do you have, Jesus? We've got Rome. What have you got? Who do you think you are? But Jesus refuses to play. He cleverly evades the trap by skillfully bringing up John the Baptist. John, remember, way back at the beginning of the story of Jesus' life, was the prophet who heralded the coming of the Messiah in the desert. And while he did so, he castigated the religious authorities for their practice of injustice. "You brood of vipers," he told them in the third chapter of Matthew's Gospel. He challenged them. "Even now the axe lies at the root of the tree," John said. And the people loved John for his boldness. They flocked to him all the way in the desert because he loved to tweak the noses of the powerful. And Jesus relies on his popularity. He indirectly relies on the power of the people to avoid playing the game. He won't get trapped in their power measuring game. Jesus doesn't play by their rules. He breaks them. The conflict between Jesus and the powers that be is increasing in intensity at this point in the story. He has triumphantly entered the city of Jerusalem, and the crowds were hailing him as king, as Messiah. The crowds were putting palm branches and cloaks before him, draping him in purple, the color of royalty, as a new Messiah coming. But how did he come? On a donkey, humbly riding into town. Jesus comes into the temple courts, and when he sees all of the commerce, all of the injustice, all of the money-making in the temple courts, what does he do? He gets angry and he turns over the tables. Jesus doesn't play by the rules, he overturns them. And the ones propped up by Roman power, the ones profiting from the commerce in God's house, don't like it. They don't like it one bit. By what authority are you doing these things, Jesus? Right foot red, Jesus! But Jesus refuses to play. And it points to a fundamental difference between Jesus and his opponents in the story. It's a fundamental difference between faithful Jews, of which Jesus was one, and collaborating Jews, the ones who were partners with the powers that be, the chief priests and the elders. Interestingly, the Greek word is Presbyterian for elders. But what they were about was authority and power. Who do you claim as your authority? Who lets you do these wild, radical things? They are about power, but Jesus was about relationship. The chief priests and the elders had power, and they profited from it. Jesus came to restore right relationship, that is, justice, right relationship between God and human beings and between neighbors. This is why the tax collectors and the prostitutes would enter into the kingdom first. In that culture, tax collectors and prostitutes were at the bottom of the social scale. They were hated. They bore the shame of the world, that big scarlet letter. But in that shame, they could see that John the Baptist and Jesus were offering them something that the world took away from them. That is right relationship, dignity as human beings, as children of God. Jesus came to them and he ate with them. He fellowshiped with them. He loved them. He embraced them. And they could easily sense the change Jesus was coming to bring. The authorities, the chief priests and the elders who had so much to lose, they just couldn't see it. The authorities wanted Jesus to play the game, not only because that's all they knew, but because they thought, the winning hand. They thought they had all the power. But Jesus changed the game. He tore up the spinner and swept the mat with the dots away. They would kill him for it and think that they had won the game. But this morning we claim otherwise. Jesus isn't interested in playing their game of power because faith and faithful living isn't about the exercise of power. It's about the discovery of relationship. This morning we are invited to discover that faith is not about authority. We share good news and what it means to believe in Jesus Christ, that is, be in a relationship with him, not because God is all powerful and will strike you down if you don't. We give. And we share and we obey, not because the preacher or the authority says so, but because God is in relationship with us and loves us, and in thanksgiving and love, we want to share with others. We share good news because of the blessing of relationship and the wholeness it brings. It's all about, Jesus would say elsewhere, loving God and loving neighbor. You don't have to play the power game anymore. At least you will not be defined by it. I'm breaking the rules, Jesus says. Let all who have ears to hear listen. If you don't have power or status in the world, if the world treats you differently or marginalizes you because of the color of your skin or the language that you speak or the number of zeros, digits in your bank account, or because of whom you love, if the world marginalizes you and your status is taken away, you don't have to play the power game anymore. Let me lift you up. And when the world tells you, right foot red, you say, right foot where? Mm-mm. We don't have to follow those rules anymore. And you winners, you who have all the power and the status and the resources, if you happen to have power and status, let me invite you to give them up and be free of their tyranny. Because let's face it, the game of power lays waste to life. It lays waste to justice and right relationship. It lays waste and wreaks havoc with peace. It creates rubble out of life. And this is what Jesus cannot stand. Jesus doesn't play the game. He ends the game. Jesus doesn't break all the rules, but he sure breaks the right ones. And thank God, because that means all of us, each and every one of us sitting in this place, each and every one of us out there in the world, each of us has the door to grace and life and healing and peace open to us equally. And God invites us to discover life. Saw an article in the paper, Salt Lake Tribune, and I can't think of the title now, so I'm going to walk up here and get it. Oh, yeah. It says, New Art Made from Old Stuff. It's about upscaling, what's called upscaling art. It's people that go out into the world and they find all the stuff that other people throw away, and then they gather that stuff, and they make art out of it. They go to the junkyard and they pick old pieces of machinery, hubcaps. Other artists will pick up leaves and branches that people are getting rid of. And they create beautiful things out of it. One of the artists interviewed in the story said, I saw a pair of high heels that I wanted to buy, but it was very expensive. I couldn't afford it. So I went to the junkyard, and I created a high heel shoes out of nuts and bolts and pieces of metal. And it's actually a beautiful sculpture if you want to see it. And I traded that for the pair of shoes. That was my first upscaling art. And now she makes a whole line of metal decorative shoes. And she was on display in Salt Lake City. That kind of upscaling art, that's what Jesus does. When he wipes free of all the games that we play, all the games that set one over the other, Jesus wipes it all clean and he takes the rubble of our lives and he makes beautiful things out of it. We have rubble as a church. We have rubble as communities. We have rubble all around the world. We have personal rubble created by the games of life, by the powers that be. We have a hand in creating that rubble. But then we confess and receive grace, and God takes all of that rubble and builds a beautiful thing. Let us, let God, create beautiful things out of us.